The Gary Knoll Show, weekdays at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We have a lot to share. A lot of people are talking about if we only opened up more markets, if we better embrace the idea of a free market trade and globalization, then all the people who are suffering would have jobs, pay their bills. It would be good. And we're hearing this from the left and the right, from the corporate Democrats and the president and former President Clinton, and of course those who hold a more conservative view. I believe they're all wrong, and we're going to challenge them today. Neoliberalism, globalization, and how it disrupts the social fabric of societies and causes the pain and suffering we are all inflicted with. A direct challenge to corporate Democrats and corporate Republicans. Professor Dennis Lowe, professor of sociology, graduate from Harvard, my guest to talk about this. Our issue of the day, and I'll go to this a little earlier on, recently the President of the United States said that he was going to put a temporary hold on the approval of the line that would travel, the Keystone Pipeline, that would travel from Canada down to the Gulf of Mexico through seven states. And Bill McKibben and many others said good news. In fact, Bill McKibben, who we've had on this program many times, sent out a tweet that praised the president in very laudatory terms. Okay. Well, we're going to share a different point of view. This will be from Amara Stevens from Counterpunch. Mr. McKibben, take heed. Why is environmental icon Bill McKibben praising Obama despite the president's collusion with big polluters? Let's stop playing footsie. Well, this will be an interesting analysis. And it's on environmental issues, which we deal with every single day, and we will deal with this as well. It is my belief, by the way, that those of you who are rejoicing, you won nothing. All you did is you're the man on death row or woman on death row who was given a reprieve, but it'll come up again. But then the movement will have lost its steam, and it's just a matter of time. It's one thing to say, from our technicality, it didn't happen, but I do not embrace this. I'm against it. That didn't happen. Why is it we continue constantly to put words and suggestions into a man's mouth that he refused to utter himself? I'll deal with that as well on today's show. Let's begin with something we can all agree with. We should be living a longer and healthier life. How do we do that? Well, we can take in foods that are healing. Now, there are many ways that a food can heal. It can have the right amount of fiber and water, low calories, but high nutrient density. And then it can have antioxidants. And the antioxidants are able to trap what are called free radicals, neutralize them, and then they become harmless. Hence, the more antioxidants you have throughout a day, the more free radicals you trap. The problem is most people have this notion, as long as they take a vitamin pill or a vitamin C or an antioxidant in the morning, they're good to go. No, the antioxidant will last maybe, depending upon what it's composed of, maybe an hour, hour and a half. But that's unless you're under stress or you're exercising vigorously, in which case it could be 5 or 6 minutes. So what would be a good way of getting antioxidants into our body throughout the day so that we're trapping free radicals all day, hence allowing our cells to be less damaged, and hence we live a longer life? Well, how about red beets and beet juice? Why? Because according to this latest research from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, polyphenols in the human diet are quite simply the cat's meow. They're the ticket to longevity. Now, polyphenols you can find in a lot of fruits, and like apples are loaded with them. Onions have a lot. But the beet is right up at the top. Quote, one ingredient found in many of today's green superfood formulas is red beet root powder, which is made from dehydrated beets and then ground into a powder. Although the benefits of beets are not often shouted through the rooftops, red beet roots and beet juice have a storehouse of plant-source nutrients and tremendous amount of healing potential. Beets are a good source of fiber, potassium, manganese, and folate. They're a good source of vitamin C, zinc, copper, and iron. They contain polyphenols and betalains, which are getting quite a bit of medical attention as an important natural antioxidants. Beets have been clinically proven to support liver function, and recent clinical research suggests beets and beet juice are useful in healing a variety of degenerative diseases. Now, you may not have heard of betalains, B-E-T-A-L-A-I-N-S, betalains, or lanes. They were discovered about 2001 as a class of antioxidants found most prevalently in red beets. And you need about a small amount, let's say what would be a 1 1/4 cups of beet juice a day, gives you a real boost in destroying free radicals. Now, there was a diet that was created almost 100 years ago. About 90 years ago. The diet was a Dr. Max Gerson diet. Dr. Gerson was a physician practicing in Germany. And originally he was not a cancer doctor. He worked with tuberculosis. And he had one of the more successful treatments. What his treatment consisted of was to get a lot of fresh living foods into the patients. And he always found that on Mondays after the weekend, they were always worse. The whole ward would be sicker. And he's trying to figure out why are they getting worse. And then he found out that over the weekend, the families would come and bring all forms of processed meats, which are very common there, and sausages and cheeses and pickled foods. And he found that there was clearly an association, so he got rid of all that. Allowed the people to have none of those processed foods. And he began to give them raw milk. He also gave them juices. But he gave them lots of juices. And one of his favorite things to juice was beets. And the beet tops. And carrot tops. And he came to this understanding by a simple equation. If animals love to eat these greens, then and they're living a good, healthy life, and they have strong immune systems, maybe there might be some benefit for humans. And he found in short order that people who had what otherwise would be incurable tuberculosis were able to improve, and many reversed it. He became one of the world's leading authorities, wrote several books on the subject. But also he found by purely a serendipitous occasion that one of the people not only had tuberculosis but had cancer. And the cancer improved. And then by working with people with cancer, using the same protocol, he refined it over a period of time. He found that the more sodium you have, the faster the cancer grows. So the takeaway message, people with cancer shouldn't be having anything high in sodium except natural sodium. And people want to prevent cancer, and high blood pressure, should also be low sodium. He then found that what the body really needed was potassium. And therefore, any food that was rich in potassium helped with cancer. And so he gave them very high amounts of potassium. And if you look at his juicing, It's rich in potassium, actually spikes it with potassium. Now we have a lot of studies showing how important potassium is, but still the cancer establishment hasn't yet used this, and they should. Individual doctors certainly have. And the carrots, which I do not use, because you look at his patients, and I've looked at a lot, they all have jaundice, and that overtaxes the kidney. It creates too much beta-carotene in the system. But if you use the beet tops and the beet juice and the carrot tops, along with the darker green vegetables and apples, the whole apple, well, then you're getting a lot of potassium and polyphenols and antioxidants. And that was really the cornerstone of his diet. He also believed in cleansing the body of toxins by giving them liver flushes and a lot of enemas. In fact, sometimes two or three enemas a day. He felt that any kind of release of toxins out of the liver would help the body deal with cancer. And indeed, he is correct. Now, there are people who will mock the fact that, you know, oh, I have a colonic or have a enema, it's good for you. Oh, that's nonsense. No, it isn't nonsense. In fact, ask anyone who does not have a regularity with their intestine, how do you feel? Where do you think all that non-digested fibers, bacteria into the trions, where do you think all that's going? There's moisture in there. There's water in there. Where's that water going? It's being absorbed into the body. Do you feel better or worse when you're regular? Everyone feels better. Are you bloated, gaseous? When you look in the intestine of some people who are not regular, they could have up to 15 pounds of fecal matter backed up through their intestine. That creates what is known as autotoxemia. And hence, getting a person regular, having more fiber, not only reduces the chance of colorectal cancer, but it also speeds up the absorption of nutrients, helps heal leaky gut syndrome, helps with different itises that are inflammatory conditions within the bowel. Juices help do that. Not only that, but when you spike the juice with vitamin C and other nutrients, when you have a lot of garlic and onion in the juices, you're also healing the intestine, especially if you use aloe vera and glutamine. I believe that if Dr. Max Gerson had lived, he would have continued to improve and reinvent his formula over and over again, as many innovators do. It kind of stopped when he died, and that's where it was for a long period of time. But many people have benefited from it, not everyone. So just a suggestion, if you want to do something really good for yourself, begin to juice beet greens, beetroot, and or beets, not exclusively. And if you want to cut the beet juice with some fresh lemon and grapefruit juice, even better. And that way you can be flooding the body with antioxidants, and that slows down the aging process. Now, something else that can help if you have diabetes is a water apple extract. This is, again, major research from Food Chemistry, an article entitled Flavonoids Isolated from the Aquium Leaf Extract as Potential Anti-Hyperglycemic Agents. That's what a scientific article reads like. But here's what it says in lay language. That the extracts of the water apple leaf contain flavonoids that have the ability to stabilize or lower blood sugar levels. So if you have something that you want to stabilize your blood sugar, then get yourself some extract of water apple leaf. And it was good research, and one more thing that we can use to help ourselves. Mindfulness meditation training changes your brain structure in 8 weeks. I'll quote this from Massachusetts General Hospital. Participating in an 8-week mindfulness meditation program appears to make measurable changes in brain regions associated with memory, sense of self, empathy, and stress. In a study that will appear next week in Psychiatry Research and Neuroimaging, a team led by Massachusetts General Hospital researchers report the results. the first to document meditation-produced changes over time in the brain's gray matter. Quote, although the practice of meditation is associated with a sense of peacefulness and physical relaxation, practitioners have long claimed that meditation also provides cognitive and psychological benefits that persist throughout the day. This study demonstrates that changes in brain structure may underlie some of these reported improvements, and that may not just be feeling better because they're spending time relaxing, it actually changed them. Okay, that's terrific. That's a really good, groundbreaking study. Here's a few suggestions for you. Why don't we then bring this into the prison population as a way of helping stem violence and help people who have a tendency to act out violently within the prison system? Why don't we have this as a program with the halfway houses, so when soldiers are returning from the battle zone, they can go through an 8-week program of helping them restructure their brain in cognition, peacefulness, and helping them to dissipate violent urges or fear or post-traumatic stress disorder? I believe that we should have halfway houses in every state in America that a soldier can return to, be joined there with their spouse and family, and reintegrate them into a life that's different from the constant life or death moments that they have when they're in the battlefield. Right now, returning Gulf War vets have the highest rate of homelessness, suicide, violence. They are not being helped when they return. This would be one program that could be introduced that we could help them. And one last thing that we should pay some attention to. A new study of environmental contaminants in breast milk. This is from the Norwegian Institute of Public Health. It says the levels of environmental contaminants in mother's milk is substantial. After your lactation, the number of environmental contaminants in breast milk was dropping if the mother breastfeeds. They don't, it stays there. Now, we know that breast milk is nutritionally the best food for infants, but here's my suggestion here. We have hundreds of studies that show that whatever mother drinks or eats, the chemicals, especially toxic chemicals, stay in her body. She then passes that forward into the breast milk. Why not then having a nationwide campaign that if you're going to breastfeed, which we encourage, you go through a detoxification process prior to pregnancy. A, that will help you have a healthier child, less opportunity for birth defects, heavy metal toxicity. And then B, even going through a proper detox while you're breastfeeding so that you're less likely to put those toxins through in your breast milk. All right? Simple. Not that complicated, but we should be doing it. I'm Gary Knoll. Now to our issue of the day. And then after this, I'm going to open up our call so you can share your points of view on our issue. This is from our environmental section, and I'm going to quote verbatim from Mara Stevens from Counterpunch. Quote, Obama is now billed as a hero by the likes of Bill McKibben, who tweeted yesterday that the president acted decisively and bravely, and he listened to people, not money, a good day, unquote. So writes Michael Leonardi in a piece published in Counterpunch today in the response to the so-called news that Obama had temporarily halted the construction approval for the Canadian company TransCanada Keystone Pipeline. Keystone is planned to send tar sand oil from northeastern Alberta, Canada, through 7 U.S. states to refineries along the Gulf Coast, and the pipeline is an abomination. I have to agree with Lombardi on this. Bill McKibben, that tweet from you made me gag. What can you be thinking? Lombardi is hopping mad, not just at Obama, but also at McKibben, the author, educator, activist leader who has been a real hero in the climate movement since his classic 1989 book, The End of Nature, altered our perspective on the results of environmental degradation. He connected the dots between human contributions to changes in the chemistry of Earth's atmosphere and consequences he foresaw. Cataclysmic weather, human health epidemics, events we have witnessed as they played out before our eyes in the years since. McKibben, like NASA climatologist James Hansen, has continued to try to shake us up and awake us to the exponential hastening of changes to our climate. McKibben's most recent book, EA Earth, Making a Life on a Tough New Planet, is even more dire than his earlier writings. In 2008, McKibben started a worldwide People's Climate Initiative called 350.org. Its mission is to inspire ordinary people to act to stem carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gas emissions and try to bring the level of CO2 in the atmosphere back to a safer 350 parts per million. It's now 390 parts per million, which is outrageously dangerous and snowballs upon itself. The more carbon in the atmosphere, the hotter the poles. The more the ice cap smells, the higher and less salty the oceans. The more currents change in the oceans, the less the temperatures can regulate. The more some areas are cooled, the more other areas are heated. The more landscape changes, desertification, then you get more marshes, more swamps. The more hurricanes, floods, storms, and tropical illnesses such as malaria. On the other hand, the more wildfires, droughts, ozone, smog, asthma, bronchitis infections. The more earthquakes, tsunamis, freezing spells, thunderstorms, volcanic activity, human migration, flora, fauna, species die-offs, ocean acidification, reef deaths, marine species extinction, loss of water sources, diminished food supplies, animal attacks on humans, human attacks on humans, war. Well, you see, there's a lot at stake and much to fear, because it's impossible, if we did everything right starting today, that we'll ever again see a safe level of CO2 on Earth, at least not the Earth we know and love. And fossil fuel extraction by fracking, drilling, mountaintop removal adds outrageous amounts of greenhouse gases to the atmosphere, hastening the events I just described. Yet many corporations, politicians, regulatory agencies, and groups that ostensibly exist to keep us from such catastrophes act as if some wonder technology will come along to avert such grim futures. But there is no such miracle. There's much to do. There's much to fight. We must especially oppose recalcitrant or reluctant political leaders who consider corporate campaign contributions and passing profits more alluring than securing the future of our country, let alone our continent or our species. Hence, Leonardi's bewilderment at McKibben's mild response to Obama's farce of denying construction permits for Keystone Pipeline. Be honest, the measure was no more than a political delay tactic. And in any case, why indeed is McKibben concentrating so much effort on the pipeline when it's just a tiny piece of a much bigger threat? When the mind-blowing madness of tar sands, fracking, nuclear, offshore drilling, mountain-top blasting continues unabated. Quote, the Rockefellers and Obama have found a new front man in McKibben, it seems. Well, not only do I find that harsh, I find it wrong. McKibben is not a sellout, but it's time, I believe, he took the gloves off. Leonardo continues, quote, all350.org will do is spread the word to its minions about this single issue, Keystone Pipeline, while continuing to ignore the grim reality of the tar sands that are already being refined across the United States, the dangers of nuclear power, and a whole host of other energies. Well, that's a good point, but however, I don't believe for a second that McKibben is unaware. I believe he's fully aware of all the other problems. I believe that, sensibly, he chose an issue to take on. And I do not fault him for that. I commend him for that. Because would we have known about the pipeline had it not been for McKibben and the thousands who were arrested at the White House? No, we would have not. So where we can be concerned to not to misread Obama, who is anti-environmentalist, let us be pro the choices that each environmentalist takes to enlighten us. If we have 100 McKibbens, each with 100 issues, then we're 100 times smarter than we were before. So, yes to McKibben. And Leonardi, it's easy to attack someone, be in their shoes, and do what he has done. Then let us examine your tenure in that position. That is my personal thought as Gary Knoll here on this air today. Now, Let us be honest also. Obama's slowdown of a permit for the Keystone Pipeline is indeed a delusion. This was merely a token for the big Enviro groups. But although I agree that the tar sand extraction is among the most destructive extraction of resources ever unleashed on man, I'd argue quite compellingly that fracking, gas hydrofracking, and mountaintop removal and nuclear are equal to that. If any of you saw my film, Knocking on the Devil's Door, and you realize that with the real solar storm, not the one that we were told would happen today, which I let everyone know would not be the major one, the big one's coming, that may be the worst since the Carrington effect in the 1800s, that can knock that nuclear power plant out. You get a nuclear power plant, all the electricity in a major city going out with it, with no capacity to repair it or fix it, then all the tar sands and all the gas hydrofracking ever would not compare to the damage, the carnage that that would wreak. You'd have 20 million dead people in the New York area. But it's time, Bill McKibben, to stop being so conciliatory and complacent and so at least outwardly patient. Please stop listening to those advisors and allies who must be telling you to act all nice and friendly, like toward politicians who do not have the best interest of we the people or are our irreplaceable planet at heart. They do not deserve our respect, and they certainly shouldn't get our compliance. Instead, speak the truth you know, as you've been a major voice of that. And stop packaging it as, yes, we can fix global climate change. We cannot. No one is in my shoes. If you had spent the last 7 years working as much as I have on my new documentary, which is still a year away, called The 12 Tipping Points, and a major 2,000-page tome that goes with it, on every aspect of the environment, you would see it is too late. That does not mean that life as we know will be ended. It means that of the 12 tipping points, 4 are going to tip no matter what we do. We have to be prepared for that, and that's why I suggest the moves I do, not to scare people, but rather to let them know, too late. That's not going to be changed, no matter how politically correct we want to be and inspiring in our efforts. This is not a happy fest. All you have to do is quote from your own chilling book, On Earth. You sure won't beat this bemoaneth called climate change if only we try a little harder, change ourselves, chain ourselves to the White House a little more regularly, conduct serious discussions with right senators and representatives or governors or mayors or city member council members or regulatory agency heads or energy secretaries or big NGOs, the frauds they all are. No, forget all this. This is all nonsense. That is, if and when they deign to find some time on their own busy calendars, meet with us, for crying out loud, the U.S. governance and regulatory system is broken. It is beyond repair. We should not be trying to reform anything within our government. We should try to replace it with indeed a new transformative system made up of and by and for the people. We need to shake up and wake up the U.S. public, those who are not already completely comatose to their own delusion, of which Bill Moyer speaks so ruefully. We need to counteract the sickening industry lies and propaganda with which the public is bombarded daily, from TV to web to radio to highway billboards or Twitter, even to children's coloring books. Meanwhile, the grassroots opposition made up more and more people who are suffering because of fossil fuel extraction. They have no ads. We need to be in the streets in ever greater numbers, speaking truth to power and defying corporate state control of our lives. We need to scream from the roofs and the mountaintops, be they whole or mutilated. We need to shake up the universities, for they have done nothing. I cannot tell you the contempt I have for all of our universities, complacency, and the majority of their students and their complete faculties, with rare exception. My God, have you forgotten the 1960s? Obviously, time to go back and reconnect with some of the idealism of that generation. No more letting President Obama get away with such BS. as he fed us the other day with his absurd announcement about denying for the moment the Keystone Pipeline. Obama rejected a permit on a rather silly technicality. Tellingly, he refused to seize the opportunity to educate the public about climate and the need for us to stop gathering fossil fuels via processing like fracking, tar sands, mountaintop blasting, and nuclear. In oil. He could have explained that we need to make hard choices on climate change and to invest in clean energy and jobs. Instead, he obfuscated, even bragging to his press release, quote, domestic oil and natural gas production is up during my administration. Yeah, I'm with anyone with a brain, I wouldn't be bragging about it. Least you still think he's got a molecule of environmental sense or sensibility, follow this. Obama actually vowed that his administration, quote, and I realize that over at the Nation magazine, you don't want to hear this, but I'm going to tell it to you anyhow, will continue to look for new ways to partner with oil and gas industry, develop an oil pipeline from Cushing, Oklahoma to the Gulf of Mexico, and invest in biofuels and gas, unquote. Where's geothermal? Where's wave energy? Where's all the other things that we know would work and would stop this now? But that's not where the money is. Obama cannot and will not do the right thing about climate change. He won't invest our taxpayer dollars in peace building, replacing the war economy, or renewable energy projects, unless they're insider deals, as we saw that fiasco. He won't protect us from robber barons or the dilettante daddies of Wall Street. No, they pollute our water sources. They do anything they want, and they can get away with it because they own Washington. And then they sell us grossly high-priced bottled water from the Ogallala and other aquifers to which they own access. No, he won't, because I fear he can't. It's just not in his nature and the character he has cultivated over an adulthood spent successfully climbing a seemingly impossible to climb ladder to do right by the people or the environment. Instead, he'll pretend smoothly. He's as smooth as an eel going through Vaseline, as do many members of Congress, including many so-called progressive caucus members. And by God, the next time someone uses the word progressive in front of her name, stop and demand they show you by evidence that they're nothing more than another Clinton, Obama, corporate suck-up Democrat, doesn't give a damn about anything, and probably couldn't tell you whether there's one or two S's in progressive. How much of a fraud this entire Democratic movement is today. That they actually believe the propaganda so blithely foisted upon a gullible public. But then again, with multi-million dollar ads, with $1 billion in the bank account, then they can make us believe almost anything. They create, through Alex, the legislation by these little scummy things and the state legislators who are bought and sold. My God. And you thought the only pimps and prostitutes were on street corners, destitute of civility? Go to Albany. Go to the state capitol. But make sure you arrive in a pimp mobile or they won't know who you are. Those blatant lies proliferate, even as gas corporations start shipping gas frack, gas and tar sand oil abroad, where it will be sold to the highest form bidder. Sadly, Obama is as cozy with the oil and gas corporations T. Boone Pickens, Ted Turner, Aubrey McClendon's, as he was with the Chicago Bull Buddies. Can there still be a non-neocon soul in the USA who doesn't recognize that Obama is not a brave and visionary progressive leader, but a Wall Street Democrat? We can't count on him to do the right thing on the environment, just as he's been a disaster for civil liberties. And I will deal with his civil liberty on another show. Your thoughts, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Not a minute, hour, day, or night that I don't.
Nice to have you with us today, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. A little later on, we're going to talk with Professor Dennis Lowe on neoliberal globalization. You know, that big party they happen to have that excludes all of us and plans our life for us and gets all the money they want to do anything to create all the debt. But we have to guarantee that debt. We get none of the benefits, but we get all the bills. When are we going to stop this? When are we going to close down the Federal Reserve? When are we going to say no to any more bailouts? If a corporation cannot be managed, then it should go into constructive bankruptcy. You and I have to do that. Why can't they? We'll deal with that with my guest. I'm going to play you in a moment a part of an interview from Bill Moyers, because I happen to consider Bill Moyers one of the more progressive voices in the world. And he had an interview with David Stockman, who served as U.S. Congressman from Michigan and then became the director of the Office of Budget Management under President Bush. And interesting conversation, because they really, in a short period of time, I'll have to do it in two parts, laid out the issue. But I want to say hello to some of our listeners here in studio. We have Myron, our social media director. Hi, Myron.
Hi there, Gary. How are you?
Good.
I just wanted to come on and let everybody know that last night's show was the most listened to, most downloaded show ever. And people are coming over to us for the most in-depth, objective, and unique content, unadulterated by either the left or right politics. And that's the reason. People are fed up with the same party lines they've been hearing from the mainstream and what I call the alternative mainstream for years and years. And it's just the same thing over and over again. And they're discovering new, enlightening, and empowering points of view every time they come to the site. So it's all very exciting for us.
All of you who were patient enough to listen to 7 hour and 30 minute original documentary investigative report on looking at the truth behind Dr. Andrew Wakefield's being pillared and losing his license, I thank you for having that patience. Listen to it in sections. 1.5 hours, the beginning, that's one part. My head-to-head debate with his chief attacker, Brian Deer, and then Dr. Wakefield and all the other people. That's an important program, the Progressive Commentary Hour. Thank you. Is it true or not true? I haven't looked at the figures. With all the new videos that we put up to people to download, including what we're doing now, parts of documentaries before the whole documentary comes out, that we had 1,233,000 people?
That's right. We switched over to a new YouTube site about a year and a half ago. And with the new site, we have about 1,200,000 views on those. Just in the past year and a half or so.
That's great.
Before that, we had another site that was discontinued. We had about 1 million there. So we're up to 2.5 million almost.
That's good. Well, we're keeping the information going up. And what I'm doing now, so people understand, when I'm filming a documentary, you can't always put everything from a good interview in a documentary, and sometimes I'll put 3 minutes out of a three-hour interview. Now we're taking that whole three-hour interview and putting those up aside, you know, and apart from the actual documentary, because nothing should be wasted. So we're putting everything out there as a way of people seeing the truth on issues. We have four of the finest physicians and scientists in the world on vaccines. All women, Harvard and George Washington University, talking about this issue. Again, I would only have a few minutes in this new documentary I'm doing on vaccines. But there you get 2 hours. So, thank you. And let's say hello to a few people before we... just a quick program announcement. Last Saturday, because it snowed, most everybody, and said they couldn't attend the lecture I was going to do. I'm only doing one lecture. That's it. This Sunday, a makeup lecture, same lecture, at 3 p.m. If you missed it and you want to come, the lecture is entitled, It's My Life, So I'm Going to Live It My Way. Very powerful. It'll be about 2 hours long. Starts at 3, following our arthritis group. You can call us at 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Now let's say hello to... Tamison? Tamarin? I can't see the
yes,
monitor.
Yes, Tamarin.
Hi.
Hi. Gary, I was down in D.C. for both of the Bill McKibben actions. I was arrested in the summer, and then I went back and participated in the action when we encircled the White House. Both actions, very spirited. He has a wonderful organization that kind of gets everybody organized and very, like, pepped up with what's going on. So it was, you know, it's something that's very, you know, inspirational to be a part of. But in both cases, I, in breakout groups, asked them, you know, the leadership, what was Plan B? What happens if Bill McKibben goes, what happens if Obama goes ahead and gives, you know, allows the pipeline to be built at some point, you know, in the near future? And in both cases, there is no Plan B. At least there's no Plan B that they'll discuss with you or let anyone talk about. You know, so that's what I found frustrating. I mean, you know, both of these things, that these actions that we participated in were very permitted actions. They were legal permitted actions. So there was really no civil disobedience. You know, everything was arranged beforehand in terms of the arrests and everything. So, yes, where that does get a lot of media coverage and everything, which is wonderful, it really doesn't. You know, like, who cares? You know,
basically. Here is the issue, and I appreciate you calling in and sharing this. I've known Bill for a long time. I've had him on the show, and I support his actions. But I also have told Bill, and I will tell you, that I believe that you have to have multiple approaches, including civil disobedience, because otherwise the people in the White House or the people in power in Congress can simply say, well, we certainly support your freedom of speech. See what a great country we have. You know, you have the right to come down here and demonstrate. And I'm saying, and what is the outcome? Are you going to actually denounce this and then put your energy into denouncing clean coal? But you got a lot of money from coal, and so you said clean coal. Clean coal cannot exist. It's an oxymoron. Are you going to put money into geothermal? We have thousands of geothermal streams, which mean we could heat cities. We could create energy. Not a penny towards that. And so we have enough wind technology, solar technology, and most importantly, wave energy. With all the rivers, and all, even in the East River, there's wave energy. Why not put a full front press on this? Because you can't do it both. You cannot take money and side and be aligned ideologically with the large corporate interest, and at the same time align yourself with a green interest. And to try to do it is what has been going on in this absurd farce for too long, and it's time we just called it out.
I agree, and what I'm saying also is I don't feel that these green organizations like Bill McKibben's, there's no teeth behind them. There's no, well, if they do pass the pipeline, you know, what are we going to do then? And the oil and gas industries know that they you know, I don't know, we'll all just, like, go home or something. There's, like, no teeth behind it.
Well, we are... In the next 6 months, you will see a whole. In fact, one of the things that we brought Myron in is to create a activist website where every major environmental and social issue is posted. Films, documentaries, articles, calls to action that actually challenge, challenge the people not just to show up and do a demonstration and go home or write a letter and go home, but actually carry forward. So you have a plan A, a plan B, a plan C.
Perfect.
And that you have multiple approaches to the same problem.
Perfect.
This way, if one doesn't work, we have another as a plan B.
Yeah.
We go right into action. All this is being launched. When is this being launched, Myron?
We're looking at about 2 or 3 weeks.
Two or three weeks. This is happening.
I'll look forward to that. Thank you.
Okay. I believe, as I said, I believe it's time we took the gloves off. Okay. Thank you for your call. We have, oh my goodness, everything is just loaded up here. I'll take one more from Vic from New York. Hi, Vic. You're on. Vic, you're on the air.
Yes. Yes. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I was glad to hear you, you know, point out that Obama did not block that pipeline because of his, you know, his objections to the technology, whatnot. But anyway, politically, do we have much of a choice? It seems like everybody will talk one way and then do something else. Are there candidates out there who are really looking to make changes?
Absolutely.
Or are we waiting for the, you know, the national Defense Authorization Act to take charge, and then we have to worry if the National Guard is going to shoot people in the street?
The National Guard is already prepared. B, Homeland Security worked to get all the Occupy movements out at the same time, if you remember. So that is happening. But there are candidates like Rocky Anderson. He is not alone. There are at least a dozen candidates that could be supported. But more than that, we have to align ourselves. If you vote Democrat or you vote Republican, you just voted yourself the problems of the future. You've got to withhold your vote. It's too sacred to waste a vote. Vote for someone, even failing. I would rather lose in the side of truth and allow that to be the platform for change for the future and build upon that platform. So the next cycle comes along. It's not the Koch brothers on one side and MoveOn.org on the other side. There's a whole nother presence. And how many people do you think now Googled Progressive Radio today? 365 million people. Let me repeat that, 365 million people. Now, there's a lot of different terms, and there's a lot of different reasons they're doing it, but what was number one up there? We were. So think about working in the next cycle. Work ahead. If you can't win today, look ahead to what you can do that can make a difference and create your alliances, bring people together, have inclusion, not exclusion, and see the difference. They win today because they have the power, the money, and the politicians all in their pocket. They won't win tomorrow as easily because they won't own us. We will not be just mindlessly giving our vote because we're a card-carrying Democrat or card-carrying Republican. We have higher values, and we are more honest. Thank you for your calls. Now, I just ask our engineer to ask my guest to come back tomorrow so I can spend more time with him. Instead, I want to take a moment now and share with you just part of an interview that I think really hits home on a lot of what we're trying to share with you. That is, we've got to start connecting the dots everywhere that we can to see a larger picture that we have been excluded from understanding. Before we do that, Elizabeth, you had something and yes.
Yes. We had hundreds of people calling in over last night's program, the Progressive Commentary Hour. Long program, and a particular professor said that it was the most in-depth, comprehensive investigative reporting he's ever heard in his life in any media. So there's just a huge response on that.
Good. Well, anyone can download it. It's free, and it's on the archives, Progressive Commentary Hour, 7.5 hours. But listen to it in sections, and especially the first two sections, and especially my debate with Brian Deere.
Right.
You don't want to miss that, man. Yeah, this guy thought he was smart. You got to listen to he just stepped all over himself.
I just want to say that this man actually added that he was very impressed with the way you stayed very cool and professional while Brian Deere was attempting to attack you in that moment. So he added that.
Remember Muhammad Ali, the rope-a-dope?
Right.
They think they're winning because they're getting all these hits in. No. No, he didn't win that debate. But you got to hear it. And it wasn't about me. It was about protecting the interests of truth. Because if they take down a legitimate doctor, they're destroying every one of the million parents whose children have suffered from adverse effects from vaccines. For every autistic kid that's been denied that there's a connection with the vaccine. For every child that is learning disabled, but not autism, because of a vaccine. You just simply neutralize all those people. You disempower them. That's what the attack against Wakefield was. That's why I'm there. I don't know Wakefield personally. I don't know what kind of guy he is. All I know is that the charges they brought against him were false. Anderson Cooper at CNN, how they attacked him. Stephanopoulos, all the others, they attacked him. Dr. Gupta, they attacked him. They kicked him in the press. He is innocent. And I believe anyone who listens to last night's program will see that we were able to substantially prove his innocence. And Rupert Murdoch, because last night I brought in Rupert Murdoch, I brought in, you know, the Times of London, I brought in the stock and the board of directors that Murdoch sits on, and Brian Deere working for his company. All this was brought out last night. You gotta listen to it. Now listen to, and I'm sorry I'm not going to take any more calls today, but where our lines are filled. Listen to this a little bit of a talk from Bill Moyers.
Citigroup replaces J.P. Morgan as White House chief of staff. Behind that headline is a tangled web. The new chief of staff is Jack Lew. He used to work for the giant banking conglomerate Citigroup. His predecessor as chief of staff is Bill Daley, who used to work at the giant banking conglomerate J.P. Morgan Chase. Daley was maestro of the bank's global lobbying and the chief liaison to the White House. Bill Daley replaced Obama's first chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, who once worked for a Wall Street firm where he was paid a reported $18.5 million in less than 3 years. The new chief of staff, Jack Lew, comes from Obama's Office of Management and Budget, where he replaced Peter Orszag, who now works as vice chairman for global banking at the giant conglomerate Citigroup. Still following me? It's startling, the number of high-ranking Obama officials who have spun through the revolving door between the White House and the sacred halls of investment banking. But remember, it was Bush and Cheney's cronies in big business who helped walk us right into the blast furnace of financial meltdown. Then they rushed to save the banks with taxpayer money. But of course, Bush and Cheney aren't the only ones to have a soft spot for financiers. Bankers seem to come and go pretty frequently at the White House. President Obama may call them fat cats and stir the rabble against them with populist rhetoric when it serves his purpose. But after the fiscal fiasco, he allowed the culprits to escape virtually scot-free. And when he's here in New York, he dines with them frequently and eagerly accepts their big contributions. Like his predecessors, Obama's administration has also provided the banks with billions of low-cost dollars they use for high-yielding investments to make big profits. It's a fact. The largest banks are actually bigger than they were when he took office and earn more in the first 2.5 years of his term than they did during the entire 8 years of the Bush administration. And get this. President Obama's new best friend, according to the New York Times, is Robert Wolf. They play golf, basketball, and they talk economics when Wolf is not raising money for the president's reelection campaign. Now, just who is Robert Wolf? Well, he's top dog at the U.S. branch of the giant Swiss bank UBS, the very bank that helped rich Americans evade taxes. Here, Senator Carl Levin describes some of the tricks used by UBS.
Swiss bankers aided and abetted violations of U.S. tax law by traveling to this country with client code names, encrypted computers, counter-surveillance training, and all the rest of it to enable U.S. residents to hide assets and money in Swiss accounts.
Quite a tangled web. One man who has strong views on all these cozy ties between Wall Street and Washington is David Stockman. In the 1970s, he was a young Republican congressman from Michigan and an early proponent of supply-side economics. Some call it trickle-down. You know the theory. If you cut taxes on the wealthy while cutting government, the economy will take off, money trickling down and creating millions of jobs. It was the centerpiece of Ronald Reagan's 1980 campaign for president.
There is enough fat in the government in Washington that if it was rendered and made into soap, it would wash the world.
Once in the Oval Office, President Reagan made David Stockman his budget director.
When President Reagan gave me this job, he pointed to that budget, which is some thousands and thousands of pages long, and he said, go through it from top to bottom with a fine-tooth comb, and unless you can find a persuasive demonstration why funds must be spent, cut those budgets.
Stockman helped Reagan usher in the largest tax cut in U.S. history, a cut that mainly favored the rich. But things didn't go exactly as they planned them. The economy sagged, and in 1982 and 84, Reagan and Stockman agreed to tax increases. In 1985, Stockman left government and wrote a book critical of his own years in power, The Triumph, The Politics, The Inside Story of the Reagan Revolution. He then took his economic expertise to Wall Street and became an investment banker. 30 years later, he's writing a new book with the working title, The...
We're going to be saying goodbye to some of our stations, but if you want to continue listening to this discussion, go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Triumph of crony capitalism.
Thank you for doing this.
I sat down with him to talk about how politics and high finance have turned our economy into a private club for members only.
What do you mean by crony capitalism?
Crony capitalism is about the aggressive and proactive use of political resources, lobbying, campaign contributions, influence peddling of one type or another to gain something from the governmental process that wouldn't otherwise be achievable in the market. And as the time has progressed over the last two or three decades, I think it's gotten much worse. Money dominates politics. And as a result, we have neither capitalism or democracy. We have crony capitalism, which is the worst. It's not a free market. There isn't risk-taking in the sense that if you succeed, you keep your rewards. If you fail, you accept the consequences. Look what the bailout was in 2008. There was clearly reckless speculative behavior going on for years on Wall Street. And then when the consequence finally came, The Treasury stepped in and the Fed stepped in. Everything was bailed out and the game was restarted, and I think that was a huge mistake.
You write, quote, "During a few weeks in September and October 2008, American political democracy was fatally corrupted by a resounding display of expediency and raw power. Henceforth, the door would be wide open for the entire legion of Washington's K Street lobbies, reinforced by the campaign libations prodigiously dispensed by their affiliated political action committees, to relentlessly plunder the public purse." That's a pretty strong indictment.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I think you would have to say it was fair. When you look at what came out of 2008, the only thing that came out of 2008 was a stabilization of these giant Wall Street banks. Nothing came out of 2008 that really helped Main Street. Nothing came out of 2008 that addressed our fundamental problems, that we've lost a huge swath of our middle-class jobs. Nothing came out of 2008 that made financial discipline or fiscal discipline possible. It was justified as sort of expediency. We need to do this. We need to stop the contagion. But it wasn't thought through as to what the long-term implications of this would be.
How did you see it playing out?
I think there was a lot of panic going on in the Treasury Department. I call it the BlackBerry panic. They were all looking at their BlackBerries. They could see the price of gold.
Tomorrow I will continue giving about a 10-minute segment of that interview between Bill Moyers on his PBS program and David Stockton. And we will also have Professor Dennis Lowe on for a half-hour interview on neoliberal globalization and how it disrupts the social fabric of societies and nations and actually diminishes the quality of life for the average person. But how didn't we see this? Why didn't the media tell us about it? Why were they champions of it? The same reason they have championed the wars and never show us the impact of the consequences of our actions upon the people in a war zone. So we're going to be giving each day different wake-up calls to refocus and remind us of the kind of overt corruption and subtle manipulation by the media and by the special interest groups that impact our lives. And then, more importantly, what can we do about it? So that'll be tomorrow. We've had a lot of input from people. I want to thank all of you for being on board last night. At 2:30 in the morning, I still saw that there were thousands and thousands of people. I think 22,000 people at 2:30 in the morning. That's a record. You wouldn't have had any radio program in America last night had 22,000 people at 2:30 in the morning listening. None. Not ABC, NBC, nobody. So I thank you for doing that. And we're averaging 16,400 brand new listeners every week, week in, week out. The average age, 34. Educated, concerned. So there is a lot of people who are gathering around to share insights, energy, to make it a better world, and we thank them. That's all the time we have. Thank you all very much for taking your time to listen. Stay tuned now to a very important program, Honesty Without Fear, the Whistleblower Hour. Love.
she was a friend.